Hello and welcome to the Hoop Collective podcast. We talk about the NBA. It is Tuesday afternoon. Joining me from Oakland, California, is Zanscape's Mark J. Spears. Hello, Mark.
48 degrees here, man. It's freezing.
Yeah, he's all bundled up. Joining us from Chicago, our Chicago-based NBA reporter, Jamal Collier. I don't want to open with the weather, but I was offended at Spears talking about how cold it was, Jamal.
I long for the days of 48. When is the next 48-degree day? I'll probably be wearing shorts.
Months. It's a long time away. We are in the dead of winter right now.
Yeah.
And I know Spears used to live in Denver and Boston, so I know he knows, but he's just playing around.
Well, but Denver tricks you because they have more sunny days in L.A.
Yes, 300 days of sun. It says it right on the court.
And it doesn't... And they really don't have any wind there because there's no ocean. So it's actually warmer there than you would think.
But it's also great. Colder there. it's colder. Now it's that we've done the Chamber of Commerce for Denver. Spears, you have a story running on Anscape this week about DeJounte Murray, who the Hawks lost on Monday night, but he had 40. DeJounte he gave a real interesting interview recently on a podcast talking about his days in San Antonio. It's not often that you hear people criticizing the Spurs, but he did. And, you know, he had the events over the summer up in that Pro-Am game in Seattle, where he's from. But he's an interesting guy. You know, All-Star last year. Traded for 3 first-round picks, obviously highly valued by the Hawks. What did you learn about DeJounte in this story?
Well, you know, DeJounte is very interesting. Probably one of the more interesting NBA players that, you know, I've ever talked to. And he's often told me, just wait till I tell my whole story. And I'm like, well, I'm here. Nope. Not ready, but he actually allowed me to have part of it. And one thing that's interesting is he's every morning, the first thing he does, and he was adamant to me about this being the first thing he does every morning, is he talks to about 20 incarcerated people on a app or a website called JPay. And you could send emails to people in jail, and then 48 hours, they could respond back to you. And he said that, you know, he was in juvenile hall twice, juvenile detention twice in Seattle, once when he was 11, once between his like freshman and sophomore year in high school. He was going down the wrong path. He was going down a dark path, a path where he even told me that he might not even have been alive. And he had an uncle that he ended up moving with that kind of helped turn things around. And I think the Seattle basketball community, whether, you know, it was Jamal Crawford or Will Conroy or his, you know, assistant coach. They just took him in and you know, supported him and protected him, and he ended up turning his life around. So I think he feels it is necessary for him to, on a daily basis, give some hope, give some encouragement, give a hug virtually to people incarcerated. And he said there's about 20 of them, that some are people that he met when he was there. Some are connected from friends as friends or family. But that shows you a lot about him, that every day it is important for him to communicate with incarcerated folks to try to show them a light.
That is not a story that I expected to hear. You know, he went low in the draft. I mean, he was like the 27th pick because people were worried about his background, and that irritates him, right? Like frustrated him over the years, and he's kind of had to overcome that. Even now, there are people who, especially after he kind of went off in that, there are people who kind of hold that against him. But he's had some adversity in the NBA too, because he tore his ACL in the year when he was going to, you know, get his contract extension. And the extension he got was good money. But he was signed for less than he would have gotten if he stayed healthy. And now he's dramatically outperforming the contract.
Yeah.
You know, he's definitely had a unique career. And now he's dealing with a team that's having adversity now too. General manager fired the, well, he didn't get, I don't know what you want to call it, resigned. He left in the middle of the season. Issues with the star player and the head coach. I don't think that's a secret with Trae Young and Nate McMillan. And he's having an interesting time. And, you know, he's 1 year away from free agency. And the rules make it really hard or unlikely for him to be able to sign an extension. So he's in a very interesting time in his career where he's also playing his best basketball too.
Yeah. And he, you know, it's funny now, he went from being this hood dude that you worried about to now being probably the biggest leader on the team, the most stable force on the Hawks, the one that Nate McMillan kind of like turns to a lot to try to keep the team afloat. And it's also interesting how he got there, because I said, so did you ask for a trade? And he said, no, he had a conversation with Pop that Pop brought him into the office. And he said that they had an honest, emotional conversation about his future. And Pop basically said, hey, do you want to like waste your prime years, or do you want to go somewhere and try to, you know, continue to be a playoff player, contend? And they agreed that it was best to move him. And Atlanta gave up a lot for him, right? They gave up 3 firsts and a swap and a couple players. And, you know, so that's why it's interesting, because when I hear what he said in the podcast versus what I talked to him, like, he seemed to have a lot of love for the Spurs, very thankful that they gave him an opportunity, very thankful that Pop was the one that said, hey, we're going to move you. And he said he was very much looking forward to that. He hasn't played in San Antonio yet. And they finally play in San Antonio in March. So I think that's going to be, you know, a big emotional day for him. But so, and then the Tony Parker piece, which, you know, is very interesting to me, because I think you also got to look at Tony Parker's shoes, right? And Tony was like basically the star of the Spurs for a long time, the point guard of the Spurs for a long time. And I talked to him a lot when he ended up going to Charlotte. And I think it was like either being a backup with the Spurs or being a backup in Charlotte. And sure, there probably was some ego that had to do with that. But he did have a relationship with Michael Jordan. And I think it probably was going to be hard for him to be a backup in San Antonio, right? Like, yeah, probably that ego had something to do with it, but I kind of understood, like, if I'm going to be a backup, I'd rather go somewhere else and do it. And he also retired with 1 year left on his deal. So I wonder in hindsight if Tony might have just retired in San Antonio. It's that odd. There's a couple great players in the course of the NBA who have that odd last year, right? Like Karl Tony Malone. In Charlotte, Karl Malone in LA, right? Like trying to think of some other players. But I don't think it was a knock on DeJounte that Tony didn't want to stay to mentor him. I think it was,
but DeJounte took it as a,
yeah,
he didn't seem like he had a favorable memory of Tony Parker.
And hey, I can't speak for DeJounte, but I kind of understood why Tony thought it was better to, and I think a lot of people don't know that he and Michael Jordan are close. They like families vacation together and stuff like that. And Jordan calls you and say, hey man, you're going to have a big role and we'll pay you more money. If there was one person that could convince him to leave, it's Michael Jordan.
Yeah, it was an awkward thing. You know, the Spurs were transitioning. You know, there was some discussion at the trade deadline last year that DeJounte could be available.
Yeah.
I don't know for sure if they had talks, but I got the impression. I heard his name kind of pop up on the radar right about this time last year, like a week before the deadline. but it really wasn't much traction. They ended up trading Derek White. They went with another guard. They traded in Derek White. And then DeJounte made the All-Star team. You know, he was a, I think he was injury replacement, but he ended up making the All-Star team as a Spur. And he was, I talked to him at the All-Star weekend in Cleveland, and he was really, really excited to be there. I mean, as you would think, but like,
yeah. Well, he actually, told me he also said in the interview I had with him that he wanted to finish his career with the Spurs.
Interesting. Well, yeah. I think the other issue is, you know, when he got traded, I talked to Rich Paul, his agent. And Rich said to me, you know, one of the things was the Spurs were interested in him extending, but he couldn't extend. It wasn't necessary. I mean, the way his contract, you know, Bobby Marks has talked about this a lot, that it would be irresponsible to extend. I mean, his contract, he's outplayed his contract, and the extension he can get would be below his market value. So it wasn't animus. It was just like, well, we can't extend. So the Spurs were looking at, number one, they wanted to maybe move on and look at some younger guys, but also they were looking at potentially losing him. So they made up that mind, and they got a haul for him. And in fact, that trade played a role in Travis Schlenk leaving the Hawks, because Travis Schlenk probably wanted to trade for him. He didn't want to give up what they gave up. Right. They gave up Danilo Gallinari, who was on a contract that he could be cut out of, which the Spurs did. He didn't want to, you know, Travis Schlenk's an ex. He's shown a history of being a very good drafter. He drafts very well, although the passing Doncic for Trae Young will always be attached to him, fair or not, part of the game. But you look at the Hawks roster, it's like all guys that he drafted, you know, and they've generally done pretty well with the slots that they were drafted in. And so I can understand why he didn't want to give up like control of his draft for 4 years, including the swap into the future. And it basically got forced through by other powers in the Hawks organization. I think also Tony Ressler, the owner, was heavily in favor of it. And that was the beginning really of the end of Schlenk there. So it's his situation is complicated in a team that's complicated. Yeah. So
it kind of feels that way. It's like you're the new kid, you got a new it's like somebody getting a new job and they're excited to go in there, and then you walk in and all the employees are disgruntled. Like, oh, hey. Yeah, the break room's over there, man. Ain't no food there. Like, you know, like I was excited about this job, man.
The gossip like around Atlanta, man, is not it's not encouraging right now. Anything that sounds like is going on there.
Yeah, I remember. I won't say who it is. I hope I'm not. I probably shouldn't tell this story, but when I got hired at ESPN, like a couple of weeks after I got hired, we had our annual summit meeting. With all the NBA employees, we all got together, and one of the people who was in the middle of a contract dispute came to the meeting and dressed in all black from head to toe. For both days, wore all black, and I was like, "Boy, welcome to ESPN." There was a protest going on at the first meeting. So,
did that make a difference?
That person did resign, but that person is no longer with us at ESPN.
Like, oh, wow.
Does he have the same initials as I have?
No. Okay. No.
All right. No. I didn't think that's not that guy's style.
No. Absolutely not.
Yeah.
Mark, but anyway, this was many years ago, Mark. I've been at ESPN a long time. This was like over a decade ago, but, I can see into the future asking the producers to cut out what I just said.
CB is
no, we're not playing. No.
But I do want to say, Mark, that I'm excited for to read that story about DeJounte, and like just shout out to also, like, first of all, 11 years old is a crazy age to fathom somebody being arrested at. And shout out to Jamal Crawford, because it does sound like he was playing a very huge role in kind of getting him on the basketball court and influenced his career. So like that's the what he's doing and what Jajonte is doing. It's like, that's the stuff.
If only starting your fitness journey was as easy as starting this podcast. The truth is, all the lift big, get big, and beach body ready in 3 weeks pressure stops most of us from even starting. And starting is what matters most. It's everything. Wherever you're beginning and wherever you want to be, Peloton encourages you to just start. With thousands of classes to get you moving and doing what you can, even if that's just a 10-minute low-impact class, they have those too. And when you're ready, take it up a gear with a 30-minute live DJ ride. Start with Peloton and find instructors that will keep you motivated to stay on your fitness journey. Learn the basics and build from there. Remember, doing something is everything. Get started with a Peloton bike or bike plus rental at onepeloton.com/bike/rentals. Terms apply. Vivid Seats wants you to get to the games you love this spring. Experience every pitch, assist, and game-winning shot live and in person. And the best part? Each transaction is a step toward a free 11th ticket with Vivid Seat Rewards. Score unbeatable perks like free tickets, surprise seat upgrades, and annual birthday deals. As official ticketing partner of ESPN, Vivid Seats is offering you $20 off your first $200 ticket purchase with code HOOP. That's code HOOP, H-O-O-P. Visit VividSeats.com or download the app today. Vivid Seats, experience it live. Speaking of the trade deadline, which Jamal, you spend all your time around the Bucks and the Bulls, both teams potentially active at the trade deadline. The difficult season for the Bulls continues. They'll have a good win and then they'll have a terrible loss. Billy Donovan gave an update on Lonzo Ball a couple of days ago. I don't know if people missed that. Can you give us the most recent update on that he gave?
I don't know what Billy's exact wording is, but I'd say the team has been continually, they've been encouraged about the progress or whatever, right, of that. And it's sort of been vague, but I do think there was a couple weeks ago now where Lonzo posted a video on Instagram of him dunking, kind of jumping off really 2 feet, dunking, like sort of standing straight up. It wasn't sort of an unimpressive video. Just if you,
it was an exciting video. If you were a Lonzo fan, it was an exciting video though.
And I think that that's just it, is that he's starting to be able to do some small things, jumping off his left foot, is running on treadmills, things that a few weeks ago, a few months ago, couldn't even get past that because the pain was too bad in his knee. And now at least they are seeing some small tangible steps to say, hey, he can start doing these things, and you know, he is starting to make some progress. So it's a long way away from a basketball court and running and jumping and playing 30 minutes or whatever they're going to need him to do. And I think that you know, you can look at the calendar and sort of do the math there. He's also now missed more than a year of action. But I do think that in general, the organization is, you know, is encouraged of what they've seen from Lonzo so far, recently especially.
But nowhere close.
But that's not a player, in my opinion. They haven't ruled him out, but it doesn't sound like a realistic return is coming this season. And again, even just the time off, Billy is definitely hammered home at this point. But my guys have played in a year now. So the ramp up period, if he was able to play tomorrow, would still be, you know, a month or 2 months.
Well, they're dancing around. They don't know. They don't want to put any sort of timeline on, because they did before and ended up coming back on them. But let's just be honest, it looks like he's not going to play this season. That wouldn't be surprising. I'm not putting in their words in their mouth, but there have been some discussion, including by me, about whether the Bulls should sell at the deadline. It's complicated by the fact, of course, that their draft pick is top four protected. So you could end up selling, not get lucky, and not have tried to get to the playoffs for nothing. The vibe that I've gotten recently is that that's not the direction of the Bulls are going, that they are going to continue to try to go forward and try to capture some sort of run in the second half. What is your feel on that?
Exactly that. And I think that when you say sell, it's really moving one of their sort of main three, and that being Zach, DeMar, and Vooch. And I think that, like we all kind of keep getting lured into, well, the Bulls get a 1-3 in a row, big victory over, you know, whatever playoff contender, only to lose to the Hornets or lose to the Pacers or lose to whoever. You know, they still looked up a week ago and thought that they were going to be able to move to over 500 and be in command of the play-in. I still think, now dating back to about a month or so ago, really that Minnesota game, I think we probably talked right after that when they gave up 150 points to the Timberwolves somehow, kind of at the height of their disarray. You know, they're, I think it's now 12-8. This is before Tuesday's game that they've gotten through this game. It's 12-8 since that point. Zach LaVine has looked a whole lot better. Vucevic is playing well. And I think that they want to give it time. That's the biggest thing, is that they look at a team that wasn't, at least around those guys, still wasn't built that long ago. And they still are looking at a major piece that may not be a factor this year, but they still think may be a factor at some point. And they want to give this team every chance it can take. Now, I think that there is some questions about, will they be movers around the periphery? Because they've got a few guys, contract situations, got out of rotation. They've got a guy in Alex Caruso, who I just think is going to be a hot commodity around the league. But, you know, as far as right now, it's a major change to this roster to shake things up. I don't see that necessarily being in the cards. But, you know, we're saying this, and they may come out and have a huge win or a huge loss or all the above here the next week. And I think things for them could change pretty rapidly if it keeps going that way.
And I see this discussion about the concept of trading Zach LaVine because, you know, he's not having the greatest year. Spears, how can they possibly, by the way, another Seattle guy, How can they possibly think about trading Zach LaVine? They just signed the guy to a 5-year, $200 million contract. Yeah. You committed to him. And secondly, even if you were going to trade him, you don't trade him now when he's not having a good year. I've never understood the Zach LaVine trade concept, right now, at least.
Yeah, no, I mean, you move him when he has the best value, right? It's like people talking about the Warriors should trade James Wiseman. And I'm like, what are they going to get for him now? He's so young, like, wait and let
well,
him.
Well, the counterpoint is that value going up?
Yeah, it's going to go up. Yeah. That kid's going to be better.
The listeners can't see how I'm looking at you right now, but
I could tell you.
I'm not convinced.
You don't have to be convinced. The thing is, there's so much impatience in this world. And I know this guy has not played well and he's had his injury issues and whatnot, but I saw him when he was healthy. And that was one of the, I saw him at the Hoop Summit. I watched him practice for 4 days. He does some really, really special things. The Warriors would have moved him. One, his value's low. They're not going to get anything. It's like, what, a second round pick for a guy that you pick second? That's not a good move. And I think I still have faith that he's going to turn it around. I've seen guys not have great starts and end up being something. I remember how bad the start of Chauncey Billups' career was.
He's certainly young.
Is he even 21 yet? Like,
I'm being devil's advocate. I'm not trying to say that he's done at 21. He should get, you know, like, he will never be anything. Because I think that there are teams, and, you know, I think the Bulls are kind of sneakily one of them, maybe, that should look at that and say, is that a risk to be willing to take?
If I'm a team, I try to get him for sure. I just think it would be a mistake from the Warriors to.
But in the same context with Zach, because I've had this conversation as well, is like, are you trading him when his value can't be any lower? Yeah. And one, he's been very, Zach in the last month or so, he talked about working through the knee injury at first, really since beginning of December or so. And he struggled. He's had a couple bad shooting nights, I think, recently. But since the beginning of December, his numbers look about what you'd expect Zach LaVine to look at offensively, at least. Shooting percentages are back up. It's back around 24, 25 points a game. The question though with Zach or Wiseman, I mean, yeah, he's had these lingering knee issues that have gone on here now on the second knee surgery, came into it with this year. And you can say right now it feels like the value is lowest, but if a durability question is only continue as it gets older, you know, that's, I think, that's where I was sort of questioning is how long you go. Again, I think the Bulls are, you're right, they just signed him and he I spoke to him at shoot around or at practice the other day, and he was also adamant that I just signed an extension here, that I'm not necessarily looking out at this point. He wants to be here, at least expressed to me. But you know, I think that those are just a conversation that it looks easy to say, well, yeah, this is the low point, you're trading him. But if there's no path for him to get minutes on the Warriors, I'm going to Wiseman now, no path for him to get minutes on the Warriors, and you're not even sure if he's going to be productive when he does.
Yeah.
At least now you've got the potential that somebody can talk themselves into that he's a number two pick.
But, you know, with both guys, Wiseman and LaVine, I'd wait to the offseason. Now's not the time.
Yeah.
Because, like, you look at Chicago, they rattle some stuff off. They'll move up the Eastern Conference standings ladder. When they're healthy, and you got to remember in the playoffs, Zach LaVine won't have to worry about back-to-backs. I mean, they're going to be tough. They're going to be tough to deal with. Doesn't sound like Zoe's going to be back for the postseason. But we're both, like, it's a value business, man. I'd definitely wouldn't move either one of them at the trade deadline.
I think this summer there's going to be potentially some star players available and potentially on the move this summer. Right, yeah, off the bat, we know that James Harden and Kyrie Irving are going to be unrestricted free agents. Maybe they stay put, but I don't know. And we're going to see some other stuff that, you know, potentially could happen. Unless you think that you're going to hit you feel great about hitting a home run right now. Even if you're not thrilled with the way you're playing, I think you're better off to wait if you're thinking about a major move. I just think the environment might be better for the summer. We'll be talking about that soon. By the way, as a thing for the Warriors, people ask about what the Warriors might do around the deadline. The Warriors' addition might be to upgrade Anthony Lamb to a full contract. He's on a two-way contract and running out of games. He's been a rotation player for a lot of the year. Their trade deadline move may be to trade a player away to open. I mean, they do have an open roster spot, but it costs them like an insane amount of money to sign him. But that may be the Warriors' move, is to just get Anthony Lamb on a regular contract so he can play in the postseason. And Ty Jerome is playing pretty well too. He's our other two-way guy, but Anthony Lamb is, I think, is the priority. I know that's not going to excite anybody, but
you know, both those guys have been great, man. They've been surprisingly great.
And so now the Bucks definitely have been more out there in the trade talks. Jamal, Serge Ibaka is obviously away from the team, awaiting a trade. So that's certainly out there. They have some other pieces that they could cobble together. Grayson Allen's name has been mentioned as a possible trade chip. They've obviously been attached to Jay Crowder for months now. I feel like the Bucks are going to get something done. I don't know if it's going to change the world. Now Bobby Portis is out for a period of time. I don't know if that affects their thinking. The Bucks have kind of stopped and started this year with injuries to Middleton, and then Giannis has missed some games recently. You're there a lot. What's your read on that situation?
It's funny they could, you know, Serge was had the rotation, I think, was the kind of the big reason of why he's away from the team. And now the minutes are there with Bobby being sidelined here for probably about around a month that he could potentially be playing. I think they still feel good if Bobby is back, that Bobby will be back for a playoff run and stretch run. So I don't think that they necessarily need to make a move there. But I agree with you. I think that they are a good bet to do something. I think that they are going to be involved in the Jay Crowder discussion in some way, or, you know, regardless of how and if and when he gets moved. Even have some intel that I think there was another almost three or four team trade that went down, that they almost got in involved with Jay Crowder recently, that fell apart.
So a three team trade is a no team trade. You know how I always say it, a four team trade is a pipe dream. I know that they happen, but I'm just telling you, I see all these folks posting their three team trade ideas. I'm serious, guys. Like a single digit percentage of three team proposed three team trades happen. So
yeah. So I think that they've sniffed around a couple of other guys that really you're looking at that. So the guys off the bench, they're happy with what Joe Ingles has provided them so far. And I think they still want to see him run with Middleton and as just a bigger guy who can sort of be a secondary ball handler that's sort of bigger than Grayson and can't get picked on. It's for me, I look at them and think about a potential Celtics series. And I think that when I was there we were both there in the playoffs last year. I was there on Christmas again. And every time I watched Jason Tatum and Jaylen Brown find Grayson Allen, their Pat Connaughton, or really Grayson Allen on the court, you know, it's just food. It's just they're gonna go pick and roll, and they're gonna make him switch, and they're gonna force him to guard us every time. And they're gonna sort of try to exploit that matchup. And I think that is for them trying to make sure you've got a rotation that is kind of just switch proof and sort of foolproof, that you don't have to worry about those kind of situations. So if it's a guy like Jay Crowder, if it's maybe another guard that they think they could sort of come off the bench and be a secondary playmaker with with Giannis and Chris. I do expect them to get something done because they've got enough little pieces and little things, and there seems to be an appetite there to do something. But you know, they're also pretty happy with, you know, as everybody can say, they're happy with their team, but I believe them.
So Spears, it was reported, I think, by The Athletic yesterday that Milwaukee's been given permission by the Suns to talk to Jay Crowder. I checked that out and I heard that it was indeed true. I wouldn't say it's not like unheard of. It is unusual. I also kind of get no one's seen Jay Crowder publicly for 6 months long. I don't know, since May. I mean, he can post his workout videos or whatever, but I kind of get it. But like, I wonder what kind of commodity Jay Crowder is at this point, a guy who didn't finish last year that well and hasn't played forever.
Yeah.
That's part of the problem with the Suns trying to trade him, is that nobody knows what he looks like.
Yeah, but he's always been in good shape.
I don't think he's out of shape. I just think he's out of form. Yeah.
I mean, I think it's one of those things. He's a vet. You know what he's going to give. If he has to go down to the herd to practice with them, get some reps up, do that. But he's a vet. My wonder is, like, who do they give back for him? Like, who would the Suns want for him? I mean,
I don't think they want Grayson Allen, because I think that's, you know, that trade's been out there, right? And there's been other versions of it too.
But I think that's the Bucks' kind of sticking point too. And I've heard that same point, Brian, is if Jay Crowder was playing this half season and lighting it up, and he really looked like a huge impact player that you could plug in, but because he's kind of a bit of an unknown, or at least you're not sure how much buildup you're going to have with him. And they already got a couple of guys that trying to get Chris Middleton right, trying to get Joe Ingles right. Can they kind of plug another guy in that they have to get right here in a short amount of time before the playoffs? That's something that they're worried. I think that is kind of why their offer, pretty much been their offer here.
That's the thing. So if you're doing business with the Suns right now, you're like, well, what are you going to not do a deal and then have to buy him out or just let him sit out? Like, the other thing is, you know, Woj reported last week that Matt Ishbia is going to get control of the team. I have no idea what that guy's going to do. Like, what if he comes in and is like, yeah, I want to do these four trades.
Yeah.
It was funny. Jim Dolan, he gave his first interviews in 4 years this last week. And in one of the interviews, he was talking about how new owners, he was talking about himself too, but he's like, yeah, new owners, they always make mistakes. They always think that they know best and they mess it up. And it was just funny. He said that it's true often. I don't know if I want to say it's not always
about
true.
Old owners.
Well, that's the thing. He was saying that he said he's done being meddlesome in trades. He said, I've been done, you know, 10 years ago, I stopped being meddlesome in trades. And then he went on a jag about how new owners make mistakes. And I was like, I did the math. I was like, well, 10 years ago, you'd own the team for 15 years.
Yeah.
But whatever. So,
but also with Jay too, I think his value will be based on interest. Like if Milwaukee's the only team that's interested in him, then Phoenix is basically in trouble in terms of what they could get back. I think their hope is that other teams are interested, because that's the only way I think you could get some good value for him. Otherwise, it's a fire sale.
I mean, it's pretty much already a fire sale, honestly. Yeah. I don't know. I don't know. You know, the Suns, on one hand, they're in no hurry, but no hurry hasn't.
Oh, they got to be, right?
There's a deadline now.
That's right. So I don't know. I can see the Bucks going, well, who else is going to beat our offer? They haven't beaten it yet. Now let's talk about the play of the week, the pressure to follow up Hypnotic and Cognac weighing heavily on the team. Hypnotic was in the cup, blue and ready for the play. And boom, Añejo Tequila came in with a smooth assist to Hypnotic's tropical fruit finish. Shaken, strained, poured. It was green and good. The playmaking splash shifted the tempo. Another great cocktail from the Hypnotic team. Every season is Hypnotic and Tequila season. Hypnotic Liquor, Bardstown, Kentucky, 17% alcohol by volume. Hypnotic reminds you to think wisely, drink wisely. Let me ask you about Middleton. So he's had a very rough season. There's plenty of time left for him to get it right. He is a free agent to be. He's got a player option in his contract. I think it's in the neighborhood of 40. It's over 40 million, or it's around 40 million. Number one, do you have any feel for what he? I mean, he doesn't have to make the decision today. He makes his decision in June, but if he opts out of that contract, what do you think the Bucks will do? And what do you think? You know, I mean, I mentioned earlier the potential stars could be available this summer. Well, he's a star who could be available this summer, and the Bucks are pretty deep in the tax. He's obviously a very important player. I don't know what they will do there. This is a discussion that no one's been having. And it's also worth pointing out that in September, Giannis can extend his contract. Now, he's still got years left. If he doesn't extend, it's not like he's going to walk. But, you know, if you're talking about the Bucks and you're looking out beyond, you know, the next game, looking at Middleton, what you're going to do there, and then looking about the decision that Giannis has coming up, I think are relevant questions.
Lopez is also a guy that's going to be eligible, or is going to be a free agent. His deal. $40 million is the number on the player option for Chris Middleton. This is something I going to be paying pretty close attention to through the rest of the season. I know coming into the year, Middleton was obviously looking for that number to be extended, and sort of hoping that was kind of what they'd be getting to in the off season. I think that really we're at a point that you're going to have to see how he finishes out the season. And if he sort of looks like Chris Middleton again, and they make a NBA finals or championship run with him as the number two guy, then I do know, obviously, Giannis and him have a great relationship, and Giannis likes playing with him, and they won together. So I think that if it's in the interest of keeping Giannis happy, I think the Bucks are going to be a lot more amenable to going to Chris's needs. But, you know, I think that's you got to see what the player is. He really, in the past, since April, the second round of the playoffs in April, has barely been on the court now. And, you know, he is 31, going to be 32 next season. Played a lot of minutes, been around for a long time. I'm curious of how this one's going to play out, because I think a few months ago I would have said that Chris Middleton is going to be a part of this team for a while, and I'm not sure exactly what the details will be, but those two sides are going to come to it. And I still, I'm not sort of ready to say that he's headed out of town, but I do think that there's a lot more question marks, because if the Bucks are not able to get it together or not really make another sort of run, when you've got Giannis, guys have talked about it before, there's just sort of always a timer. You want to sort of maximize what your team can be around him. And they, if they do not compete for a championship or find themselves in the finals this year, you know, I think that they're a candidate, that they've got some pieces that they may be able to, you know, shake up this team a little bit. But again, I think right now they feel happy about their team and think that they, once they're healthy, are going to be able to make
it. It's interesting. So Spears, like, I think the same sort of thing about the Warriors. Like,
yeah,
the Warriors could absolutely repeat. The Bucks could absolutely win. The Bucks could have won last year if Middleton was healthy.
Yeah.
As I look forward to this summer, I wonder what happens if the Bucks go out early. What happens if the Warriors go out early? Bob Myers is a free agent.
Yeah.
Draymond Green wants an extension. You know, both of those teams are in interesting situations that you can't predict right now.
Yeah. I had a, you know, the Draymond situation is interesting because you wonder if he opts out and goes on the free agent market, what will he get? Like, right. Will it be at the number that he's at now? Who would give it to him? But there was an exec from another team who's like, I hope he does, because we'd love to have somebody like him on our team. Mm-hmm. I'd really be interested to see if he really wants to be in another uniform, because he's very, very smart. And he knows that the grass isn't greener in most places. Right? Like, he's used to a certain standard. He knows the legacy that he's building. You know, I wonder at what number would he take an extension from the Warriors? Would he take less to finish his career there? Would he just opt in, do another year, and see what happens after that, which is quite possible? But yeah, I mean, his number is intriguing. Bob's situation is something that's being talked a lot in the Bay. What I've often heard is that, you know, Joe Lacob's sons aren't in Bob's way. If anything, they often go to Bob to see what he thinks. This isn't like a situation in Atlanta. I could be wrong, yes. But I think there's a lot of respect there. And then it's like, okay, where's Bob going to go?
Right? I think Bob is at a point in his career. I don't want to speak for him, but he's had that job for a long time. It's been pretty exhausting. You know, I don't think it's a matter of, I want out of Golden State. It's a matter of, I want to keep doing this job right now.
Well, what else are you going to do?
He started a podcast.
Yeah.
With Omaha Productions. You can hear it on various ESPN channels.
Yeah. Yeah, no.
We'll have him on.
Good luck.
I think a lot of people would take stress for all those finals appearances and rings, right? So,
or when you're negotiating a contract, it's not a bad idea to make it look like, you know,
I don't need this.
Yeah. Sounds good till you lose it.
Yeah. Well, I do think the Bucks will probably do something. I'm not so sure about the Bulls and the Warriors. If they come out of it with Anthony Lamb signed to a full contract, it wouldn't surprise me.
I would keep a really quick Bulls note is that a veteran point guard is the one thing I would keep an eye out on them. Is that is something I know they've sniffed around on a couple options there. Well,
they should have gotten a veteran point guard last summer, quite frankly. They signed Goran Dragic and said, okay, that's fine. But I mean,
yes.
Lonzo was never close. And
do you think Chicago could have interest? And this is just me being fantasy GM right now. And Fred VanVleet?
I would guess that the stuff it would take to get him, they don't have a whole lot of assets.
Bulls, if this is, okay, again, Brian's choked me across the internet waves, but could a team like Toronto say, like, you know what, we'll take Lonzo Ball. He's young.
I don't think so. No. Because if Fred is truly available, which is not clear yet, I think there would be a lot of bidders. And I think the Bulls would just get outbid, quite frankly.
Yeah. You don't have young picks to trade. You don't have, Patrick Williams. I would be surprised if he's put forth in a trade discussion for them. So it's kind of – you're talking about really working around the fringes there. Although, to Mark's point, if I'm the Bulls and I'm the Raptors and looking at those two teams, we got some stuff that's not really working over here. We got some stuff not really working over here. Just kind of feel like that's going to be speculating. Literally, like that, you know, not saying they have, but I just look at one team that needs offense and a team that needs defense. And
well, if there's going to be a bidding war for Fred VanVleet, I think the Clippers are going to be near the front of the line. But I mean, they could get outbid too. Spears, you just saw the Raptors. They're in the midst of this really pivotal 7-game road trip for them. They're doing okay. They're not torching it. They're not getting torched. We've talked about on this pod, like, they're one of the most pivotal teams. They're what happens with the Raptors? What did you come away from spending some time with them?
Well, no, I haven't.
You haven't?
I was out of town.
Oh.
They came through. Oh. When they came through, I wasn't here. I wish I did. I think they went to Sac and Golden State. I was in
New Orleans. Yeah, you went to New Orleans.
Yeah, but I hear the Raptors name more than anybody, right?
I know.
In all these trade rumors. It's Fred one day, it's Gary Trent Jr. the one day, it's OG the next. Then you hear Pascal. Well, they're not trading Pascal.
I'm not sure any of these dudes are getting traded, just to be clear.
Yeah.
But it wouldn't surprise me if Masai, who has won some deals by waiting till the very end, like he waited the Spurs out. And also like an auction for OG Anunoby right now. Like let's say OG Anunoby was made available like next Tuesday. Think of the teams that could make big offers who would want OG Anunoby. The Grizzlies, the Pelicans, the Knicks, the Blazers, the Suns. Like if Masai wanted to auction OG, he could probably get a ransom price for him. But I'm not sure if he's going to do it. I just know that I don't put anything past him.
Yeah. No, I mean, Masai's probably just sitting back, just kind of real, like, you know, you see all those numbers in his brain above his head, you know, like a Einstein kind of like thing, what he could do or not do. But yeah, they're a team I hear a lot. The guy I'm kind of curious about, and this is kind of digging in the crates, is Jakob Poeltl.
Yeah.
I like him. And I think he could be a really big help to a team. Now, if you know, going back to Jamal, if now the Spurs say something to the Warriors about, hey, we'll try Wiseman for him. Like, would the Warriors be willing to do that? I don't know.
Man, that would be a good trade for the Warriors, at least in the short term. Maybe not long term, but in the short term, oof.
Yeah, but I do think that Poeltl does all the little things, you know, scoring the post as well. It's a better rim protector than probably gets credit for. I could see him. It's not a sexy name on there, but with his, you know, being in the final season of his contract, with not a lot of people on the market that do what he does, I see him as an attractive piece.
So the unknown there is what has been said between Poeltl and the Spurs. So he's in a similar situation as DeJounte was. You know, I told you that, like, you know, ultimately the Spurs inquired with whether DeJounte was ready to extend. He wasn't. And that helped them understand they needed to probably trade him. In the case of Poeltl, he also hasn't extended because it doesn't behoove him to do so. But who knows what the understanding is. I mean, the Spurs have to spend money on somebody. They could prioritize giving Poeltl a new contract in the offseason, and there could be an understanding there, and that means that he's not on the market. Now, I heard a lot of discussion about Poeltl in November and December. I haven't heard anything lately. It doesn't mean that it's not happening. It just, it hasn't reached my ears. People thought that he was going to be a guy that was going to get moved. And look, last year, you know, we didn't typically see the Spurs do business at the deadline. Well, last year in their retrofit, they did. They did do business at the deadline. And their last couple of trades have been selling pieces off. So this would be another one. So I don't know. The irony, of course, he'd also be great for Toronto, who traded him for Kawhi. And if Toronto decided they wanted to buy instead of sell, which is on the table still, that would be interesting. But we'll be talking about that a lot more in the next week as we barrel towards the deadline. Thank you to Mr. Spears. Thank you to Mr. Collier. Thank you to Bruce and Jackson, our producers. Thank you for listening to the Hoop Collective. We'll be talking to you on Friday with the Timbs. Have a good day.